"Find out what happened to them," the plantation owner asked, "and what's been gobbling up my workers." "Yes, I did," I said, and pulled out the Navagos head from my bag. "Ordens, tits!" the plantation owner swore as his horse reared up on its hind legs, frightened by the creature's head. "Throw that damn thing on the ground!" I did as I was told, and the head made a solid thump on the soft soil.
"Well, you've definitely kept up your half of the bargain," the plantation owner said.
Ha, if he only knew. He held out a handful of silver coins to pay us for the quests. Then he said,
"You three are quite capable, and something special. I'd like to invite you to be my honored guests at the ball tonight."
"Ball?" I asked.
Alaria immediately perked up.
"Just a little soiree that we hold twice a year, put on by the local plantation owners. It will be at my good friend Lord Odeon's mansion."
Alaria and I exchanged excited glances. We were being invited right into the viper's nest itself. The plantation owner continued.
"That's the very large house on the other side of the road, the half I don't own. We start at 8, and there will be refreshments and live music. I do hope you can come."
The plantation owner dipped his hat at Alaria.
"Odeon will be particularly happy to see you. He does love his beautiful demon ladies, I must say."
"Oh, I'm sure he does," Alaria said with an ironic smile.
The plantation owner gave me one of the three rings from the slave hunters.
"Just show this at the front door. That will be enough to get you in. Well, I must be off. So much to do and so little time to do it. Good day, adventurers," he called out,
then galloped off down the road. I looked at Alaria as I pocketed the Medusa ring. See? There are no coincidences in the greater scheme of things. She grimaced.
"You know there's no way I can walk in there looking like this, right? As soon as he sees me, the jig is up."
I thought for a second, then smiled. "I think it's time to pay Lil another visit."
31.
When we entered the bait shop again just 10 minutes later, Lil looked at us in surprise.
"I did not think you would be needing my help so soon."
"Neither did we. But we just got invited to a ball we need to attend, and..." I looked over at Alaria and Stig. "My friends here can't exactly go looking like this. Do you have some sort of disguise they could wear?"
"They be very tolerant of devil folk here,"
Lil said, then her expression turned sour.
"Just not elemental folk."
"That may be the case, but we still need to be able to walk into the ball without anyone knowing it's her. Them. Lil gave me a cryptic smile.
"I think I have exactly the things you be needin'. Come, follow me."
She led us into the back room of the shop, where a treasure chest with a lock sat on the floor. She muttered a few incantations, inserted a key, and the lock opened with a click. There were a few items inside, mostly necklaces and bracelets, but they all looked like cheap costume jewelry. Certainly nothing that would seem to warrant being kept under such heavily fortified protection. She rummaged around in the trunk until she found what she was looking for.
"Come here, my child," she said to Alaria.
My succubus stepped up warily. Lil took out a necklace of glass beads and put it around Alaria's head, careful not to catch the chain on her horns. As soon as the amulet at the end of the necklace touched Alaria's chest, though, something amazing happened. It was like a wave of milk passed over her skin, obliterating any trace of red and turning it to silky white. As the wave of colorlessness moved up over her face, her black hair turned white too, though her features were exactly the same. Not only that, but her horns, wings, and tail disappeared, like they just faded away. It was like a magical version of the flower we'd used on her days before, but absolutely flawless in its deception. Alaria looked at her pale white hands in amazement.
"'Tis just a glamour, darling, but it will be enough to conceal you. Make sure you do not take off the necklace at the ball, though, or everyone will see your true self."
"Thank you," Alaria said, amazed.
"And for the little man, I have something for him."
Lil pulled out a brass brooch and held it out to Stig.
Normally this would go on clothes, and I recommend you doing that, since nudity will be highly frowned upon at the ball.
Lil grinned mischievously.
But if you wear this on whatever your clothes are, you will be fine.
Stig took hold of the brooch. As soon as he did, a similar wave passed over his hand, except this one was a ruddy pink color, and worked its way up his body in exactly the same manner. Within seconds, we were looking at a dwarf with a black beard. Though he was buck naked, he had no observable genitalia.
Dude, you look like a Ken doll, I said.
A what?
Stig croaked. It was odd hearing his chain-smoking Muppet voice come out of the dwarf's mouth. Never mind. We need to get you some clothes.
If you are going to the ball, you should go to Minnie's dress shop in the village. She will sell you something very nice.
The purplish woman winked.
Tell her Lil sent you, and she'll do right by you on the price.
Thank you, I said. How can we repay you?
It is not you who is repaying me, but I who am repaying you. In return for your silence about my friends in the fields.
I nodded. Well, thank you anyway. Lil nodded, then smiled sadly at Ilaria.
You do not remember me, do you, girl?
An uneasy look passed over Ilaria's face.
I'm sorry?
You were at the plantation owner Odion's house many years ago, were you not?
If it was possible for Ilaria's already white cheeks to get paler, they did.
Do not worry, child. You have kept my secrets and I will keep yours. And if Odion should come to an unfortunate end tonight, so much the better for his workers whom I try to save. But I must warn you, he has powerful friends, and he will not hesitate to call on them.
Lil began to chant in a sing-song voice.
Mirror, mirrors on the walls, who you show when darkness falls, three round midnight chasing one, in the land of black sky sun. Revenge is bitter but worth the cost, unless it be your sword that's lost.
Ilaria stared at her in shock, then muttered,
I have to go.
She turned and walked out of the shop as quickly as she could.
What was that all about? I asked in alarm.
Lil ignored the question and asked one of me instead.
And you? What are you thinking, giving your heart to a succubus?
The aforementioned heart skipped a beat.
What are you talking about? I asked, fooling no one.
You should be careful, boy, Lil warned me. She will hurt you one day, even though she does not want or mean to. Protect yourself. She is what she is, and nothing can change that, no matter how much you may care for her.
Thanks, I think, I said, unsure of whether I should be thanking her at all.
Luck to all three of you, tonight and afterwards,
Lil called as Stig and I followed Ilaria out of the shop.
You will need it.
I found Ilaria outside, back to her red skin, black hair, tail, wings, and horns. The necklace dangled loosely from her hand.
Well, that was crazy, huh? I asked, trying to be light and flippant, even though I'd been shaken by the witch's words.
Yeah, crazy, Ilaria muttered. Are you okay?
I'm fine. I don't remember her. And it's a little unsettling that she knows why we're here.
She's going to keep our secret, though.
But the fact that she knew who I was before and didn't tell me? I'm a little more worried about the secret she's not telling us.
I thought about that. Ilaria definitely had a point. And then I saw Stig walk out in front of me, his pale dwarf buttocks moving back and forth as he walked naked along the ground.
Stig, I yelled, give me that brooch.
But I kind of like being a dwarf, boss,
Stig protested.
You can be one later when we get you clothes. Until then, no.
My imp sighed, then handed over the piece of costume jewelry. Almost immediately, the illusion disappeared like an ice sculpture melting and fast forward, leaving behind the little gray body with the floppy ears and yellow glowing eyes. All right. Let's see about those clothes, I said.
32. The dress shop actually carried formal wear for both men and women. Millie was more than helpful when she found out we were Lil's friends, and gave us quite the bargain on our clothes. I decided on a suit that made me look like a rich American from the 1700s, complete with a coat with tails. Ilaria put on the necklace, then chose a dress that made her look like Marie Antoinette, all ruffles and lace, with a bustier so tight that it made her boobs look even more gigantic. Not to mention a big train that swished around in her wake. She stood there in the center of the shop and spun around, entranced as any four-year-old girl as she watched the dress twirl all around her. For Stig, we got him a tux, or something close to it. Then we pinned the brooch on. It was a little odd seeing a dwarf wear a tux, but the shopkeeper really didn't have much else in his size. It was actually a child's suit, but it fit him well enough. As soon as we pinned on the brooch, he looked like a dead ringer for a dwarf butler. Just don't say anything at the ball, I instructed Stig. You don't sound anything like a dwarf.
Good call, boss.
After we paid, only 10 silver for the dress, and then another 5 each for my suit and Stig's. Special prices for friends of Lil's, Millie said with a wink. We went out and found an inn. Luckily, this one was not run by a chubby theocrat with a stick up her ass, and we got a prime room that looked out over the fields. It felt like something out of New Orleans, with French doors leading out onto a balcony, and a spacious room with a 4-poster bed. Best of all, it had an ornate porcelain bathtub with magically running water sitting at the far end of the suite. The rest of the bathroom was in its own contained area, but the bathtub was sort of a centerpiece for the room.
By the goddess's orgasm, this is heavenly, Ilaria sighed as she laid back in a steaming hot bubble bath.
I just watched, entranced as she lathered herself up. The bubbles obscured almost everything, but just knowing she was naked underneath the water was enough to get me going. Stig sat over in the corner, staring out the window.
Been a while since you had a bath? I asked Ilaria. She smirked.
Ever since that impromptu swim in the river a couple of days ago, yes.
I blushed as I remembered it. I wouldn't call that a bath.
No, I guess it was more like skinny dipping.
Yeah, well, I would call it a tease, I said with a hint of bitterness in my voice.
Tease?
She asked, her voice teasing me yet again.
What? You mean like this?
She stuck her leg straight up out of the water and ran her soapy fingers sensually down her calf and thigh. My pants immediately began to get a wee bit tighter.
Ha ha, I said, very funny.
What? You don't like the sense of anticipation?
She asked, and sat up in the bathtub. Her breasts rose above the level of water, but bubbles still clung to them, obscuring almost everything from sight.
What if I were to wipe away some of these bubbles?
She said coyly, and traced her fingers down her chest. With one swipe of her fingers, she removed half of the bubbles. Her firm, gravity-defying breasts and the cleavage between them were suddenly way more visible. Still no nipplage, though. My mouth started to water, but I remembered what had happened last time she did this. Cut it out, I said in irritation.
Don't you want to see more, master?
She asked, and slowly began spiraling her fingers around her breasts, removing the bubbles from her skin, until all that was left was 2 mounds of white foam over her nipples.
Oh, mama.
This is awkward again,
Stig announced from the corner. I turned around and pitched him a silver coin from my bag. Go get a bottle of wine down in the bar and don't come back. I'll come get you. Stig caught the coin midair and looked happier than I'd seen him in days.
You got it, boss,
he hooted, then disappeared. Not out the door, but out the open window. Apparently, he was in too much of a hurry to use the stairs. Ilaria smirked as she lay back in the water, completely submerging her assets again.
What? You think getting rid of your imp is going to get you a better show?
No. I just didn't want him reminding me what happened in the wardrobe the other night, I said crossly.
I don't ever want to hear this is awkward again. The room filled with her delicate, feminine laughter.
He was only telling the truth.
Doesn't mean I have to listen to it. I went over to the bed and started fiddling with my suit, which was laid out on the comforter.
Are you going to take a bath? Ilaria asked.
After you're finished.
You know, there's room enough in here for both of us.
I looked around at her sharply. Very funny. She batted her eyes flirtatiously.
We've bathed together before. I don't see why this time should be any different.
Something inside me snapped.
You just like to twist me up in knots just so you can feed your own damn ego.
She smirked.
And you aren't enjoying it?
No, I'm not.
You don't enjoy seeing me naked?
Actually, that part's great. But the mind games and crap that goes along with it sucks.
If I gave you one wish, she said, something that can happen in this room, what would you wish for?
I stared at her, and I could feel myself growing hard again. Then I wised up. You're not going to grant my wish, so what's the point in answering that question? I said in irritation. She leaned up against the edge of the tub, folded her arms across the top, and balanced her chin atop her hands. She looked wildly enticing, and somehow innocent at the same time. What she did next, though, was anything but innocent.
Would you like me to take you in my mouth?
I gulped. I hadn't been expecting that.
Would you like me to get you hard, and then suck on you?
She smiled and suggestively licked her lips.
Would you like me to play with your balls as I slowly move up and down on your shaft, my tongue soft as velvet, slowly bringing you higher and higher until you explode in my mouth?
I didn't say anything, although I think the bulge in my pants did the talking for me. Suddenly, she returned to her same old game. She went cold. A 180-degree change in attitude. Her face grew distant, and her eyes turned icy.
It's always about what you masters want, you humans. You always take and take and take without any thought about the person you're taking from.
I'm not like that, I said defensively.
Oh, no?
She raised her arms, put her interlaced fingers behind her head, then settled back into the water.
What exactly would you do for me, with no thought of pleasure for yourself?
I stared at her. Are you asking me to go down on you? She raised an eyebrow seductively.
I don't know. Would you?
My heart was hammering in my chest.
Of course I would.
She smirked.
As foreplay to get what you really want?
No. I would do it just to bring you pleasure. That's all. And it was true. I would count myself incredibly lucky if I were able to get anywhere near that close to her incredible body. All of a sudden, she stood up from the bath, soap and water dripping down off her gorgeous form. She grabbed a pitcher sitting by the bath, then poured clean water down her neck, shoulders, chest, and back. It was the first unobstructed view I had ever had of her perfect body. Her breasts were absolutely magnificent. Her areolas were the way I'd seen them in glimpses back at the pool, the size of half dollars, in a dusky, brownish red that contrasted with the pure red of her skin. The edges were beautiful, almost like someone had airbrushed them onto her body. Her nipples stood out just the tiniest bit from the rest of her breasts, less than an eighth of an inch. But what I hadn't seen yet was down below. Below her navel was a rectangular thatch of curly black hair, more of a landing strip than anything. The rest was completely bare. My erection was about to burst out of my pants any second.
You said you would do something for my pleasure and my pleasure alone, she purred. So prove it.
She stepped out of the bathtub and onto the floor, then expanded her wings to their fullest width. She did that thing from back at the river where her body vibrated the slightest bit, and the water droplets vaporized from her skin. Now fully dry, she walked over to the bed right next to me. She crawled across the sheets and then lay on her back, Her black wings spread out beneath her. She put her head on a pillow and regarded me calmly, one knee up in the air, the other leg lying flat on the bed. "Well," she said, and then glanced down below her waist. "It ain't gonna lick itself." I couldn't believe this was happening. Part of me was like, "Don't do this. You have no idea what the consequences could be." But another part was yelling, "Screw the consequences!" Spoiler alert, that part won. I settled down on the bed between her legs and gently pushed her thighs apart. They opened up before me, revealing her soft, hairless lips. She was absolutely gorgeous. I had only been with a few women, but I'd seen a fair amount of porn on the internet, and I'd never seen anything quite this beautiful before. Delicate lips, the swell of her mound, the tip of her hood, and a tiny red pearl peeking out. I crept up closer to her and positioned myself right between her thighs. She looked down at me from the pillow and smirked like, "Well?" I'd done this enough with my girlfriend Amy that I wasn't particularly worried about technique. Oral was the one thing I actually felt pretty confident about. The truth of it was, I was doing this for my pleasure, not hers. Or not just hers. I might not get naked, and my own junk might not get any attention, but I was going to enjoy the hell out of this. I leaned over and brought my mouth close to her lips, but I didn't touch her. I just waited there, breathing lightly against her skin. She watched me, her eyes locked on mine. And then, slowly, softly, I bent my head forward, and I kissed her. Her eyelids twitched, like she was trying to keep her expression neutral, but failed the tiniest bit. I kissed her again, but this time, I let my lips trail slowly across her silky, smooth skin. Lightly, like I was trying to tickle her with my lower lip. I moved my mouth towards the juncture of her leg and her torso, and licked her softly. Not directly on her most sensitive parts, but close by. God, she was smooth and soft. Her ribcage was moving up and down a little more rapidly. Other than that, there wasn't any reaction on her face at all. I kissed her again in the crook of her leg, and licked the slightest bit, feeling the firm muscles beneath her skin. Then I kissed softly, gently, back across her lips to the middle of her cleft, slowly tickling her with my lips as I moved up and down. The next time I looked at her face, her eyes were closed, and she seemed to be lost in a private reverie. That emboldened me, and turned me on. I began to lick her lips very softly, starting down low and moving very gently upwards to the top of her cleft. A tiny groan escaped her lips. Nothing loud, just a murmur. That was enough to urge me onward. I let the tip of my tongue slowly ease itself inside her. God, she was hot. Not just sexy, but warmer than a normal woman. Not scalding hot or anything, but definitely above normal body temperature. And her taste. Damn, she tasted amazing. It was that cinnamon and vanilla scent all over again, but spicier, in a good way. And sweet. She tasted like a much milder version of hot cinnamon candy, and it made my tongue tingle as I sank deep within her. This time, the groan that escaped her lips wasn't nearly as subtle. Not only that, but I could see that her nipples had begun to grow harder and to poke out farther from her firm breasts. The sound she made, and the sight of her getting visibly excited, turned me on even more. I reached my arms up around her legs and let my fingers caress gently down her belly, starting at her navel and traveling down to her little strip of hair. At the same time, I began to lick her up and down until I found the little swelling bud of her clitoris. I began to lick it softly with my tongue, then a little faster, a little more urgently, with more pressure, until the intermittent groans escaping from her mouth didn't stop, but kept increasing in need and intensity. I noticed that she moved one of her hands to her breast and began lightly circling her areola with a fingernail. occasionally stroking the hard, erect nipple with her fingertip. Now I was incredibly turned on. But rather than concentrate on my own pleasure, I focused on hers. Time for the next stage. I pulled one of my hands away from her belly, brought it up to my mouth, and licked my finger. Then I positioned it right between her two swollen lips and slowly eased it inside her as I began to lick her clit again. She was so warm inside, and so wet. Her juices tasted even sweeter and more like cinnamon than they had just 30 seconds before. I knew that all of this wetness wasn't coming from my saliva. Alaria arched her lower back, and her low groans turned into whimpering. She was actively clutching both her breasts now with her hands, pinching her nipples between her fingers and thumbs. With my free hand, I reached up and cupped her breast. It was firm and soft all at once, and way more than a handful. I touched her nipple with my finger. She suddenly grabbed my hand without looking, and pressed it harder into her boob, urging me on in a frenzy. I almost came in my pants just from that, but I had more to do. With the finger of my other hand inside her, I began to stroke her, curling my finger in a come-hither motion as I kept licking her clit. Now she was pressing her hips against my face, trying to get more pressure from my mouth, so I gave it. I began to suck on her, lightly trying to pull her clit into my mouth, alternating with swirls of my tongue around the hood. At the same time, I was stroking inside her faster and firmer. She was actively writhing on the bed now, her hips straining against my face, smashing her breasts together with her hands, her facial expression somewhere between agony and ecstasy. That was when I pulled my finger out. Her eyes popped open, and she looked down at me with a look like, "What the hell are you doing?" I thought about walking away from the bed and saying, "Bored now," which is exactly the sort of treatment she would have given me. But the truth was, I was enjoying myself too damn much to stop. I grinned at her, then licked not only my index finger that had been inside her, but also my middle finger. Then, while she stared me in the eyes, I slipped both of them inside her. Immediately her eyes rolled back in her head, she closed her lids in ecstasy, and she arched her head back as she moaned. I went back to stroking her, but this time with both fingers as I licked and sucked outside. She was so wet, and the warmth from her body was like a furnace. I moved my free hand from her breasts down to her waist, then under her ass. Oh God, my hand just kept going from one incredible sensation to the next as I cupped one of her cheeks and squeezed. With my other hand, I began to move my fingers in and out of her rapidly, still rubbing her G-spot, but adding more pressure as I touched inside her. And my tongue was wild. It licked and sucked and caressed and toyed with her, playing with her clit until it seemed like my mouth was joined to her body in a link of pure pleasure and bliss. Her tail began to whip back and forth on the bed, wrapping around my arm and neck. I kept teasing her, pleasing her, sucking and licking. She was moaning loudly now, her hips bucking against my mouth. Her hands gripped her breasts violently. Her entire body arched. I began to feel a tightening around my fingers, a rhythmic pulse. And then all of a sudden she grabbed my head and pushed me away, which was the exact opposite of what I'd been expecting. Any second now, I thought she was going to grab my head and force me harder into her. I froze and looked up at her wide-eyed. She scurried backwards, my fingers pulling out of her automatically as she backed away. Her face looked angry. Or was it scared? I couldn't tell. "What's wrong?" I asked, bewildered.
"Nothing,"
she said in a dull voice as she got out of bed.
"I just don't want to do this anymore."
"Why not? I thought you were enjoying it."
"I'm sure it looked that way," she said coldly. "But I'm not."
That made me angry. I got to my feet and growled, "You're lying. You were enjoying it."
"I was just acting," she said coldly.
But she wouldn't look me in the eyes.
"Bullshit."
She suddenly faced me and hissed like a feral creature baring its teeth in self-defense.
Leave me alone! Do you understand? Leave me alone!
Then she stormed off to the bathroom and slammed the door shut behind her. I stood there with my erection throbbing painfully in my pants. But all I felt was bewilderment, shock, and hurt at how she had reacted. 33. An hour later, we were walking through the dusty streets of town, away from the inn and towards the plantation where the ball would be held. We were dressed in our purchased finery, me and Stig in our suits, and Ilaria in her French Revolution-era dress. Thanks to their enchanted jewelry, my two demons' illusions were complete. Stig looked like a dwarf stuffed into a tux, and this time had the benefit of having his junk, or lack thereof, covered by pants. Ilaria looked stunning. Her milky white skin and her white hair piled atop her head made her look exactly like Marie Antoinette. I didn't look too bad myself. I was a little worried that the scepter strapped to the back of my jacket would cause some stares at the ball, but nobody on the street gave me a second look. But at the moment, I wasn't thinking about what lay at the end of our path. I was thinking about what had happened just an hour before. "I think we should talk about this," I said to Ilaria. "I don't," she said, as she held the hem of her dress several inches above the dirt road. "God, I hate these things. I don't understand how you humans wear them all the time."
"Are you talking about the dress?"
"Yes, of course," she snapped. "What else would I be talking about?"
"I guess it makes sense, since you wear next to nothing. Speaking of wearing absolutely nothing, an hour ago..."
"Awkward,"
Stig piped up from next to us.
"I told you I don't want to talk about this," Ilaria hissed. "How could you be enjoying yourself that much and then just coldly shut it all down?" "Oh yes, of course," she said in a cutting voice. "I was enjoying myself so much. You're the absolute best I've ever had," she said sarcastically.
I stepped back, stung by her words. I could see something in her eyes. Hesitancy? Regret? I wasn't sure. And I didn't give a damn. "Never mind," I said coldly. "Let's just drop it."
"Okay," she agreed quietly.
Her voice wasn't belligerent now. In fact, there was almost a quality of submissiveness to it. Unless she was acting again. On the outside, I was calm, but I was raging inside. For a second, I thought about canceling the entire quest just to punish her, then sending her back to wherever she came from and just leveling up on my own until I could get a new demon helper. Stig had been right. Hot chicks were nothing but trouble. But then I realized how petty I was being. I needed the quests, and I had already agreed to help her. Why go back on that just because she wasn't returning my affections like I wanted? She'd told me before she didn't want to sleep with me. The whole oral sex thing had been more or less a dare. It's not like she'd fallen into bed with me overcome by emotion or passion or desire. And oh my God, that falling into bed part. No matter what, I was immensely grateful for what I'd been able to experience. I'd never been with a woman as hot as Ilaria before, and probably never would be again. I was batting way out of my league with her. Despite the fact that I didn't get an equal amount of attention out of it, the experience had been overwhelmingly pleasurable for me, at least up until the very end. All I could think of was the feel of her lips and clit on my tongue, the taste of her in my mouth, the smoothness of her skin, the absolute heaven of clutching her breast and ass. That's what hurt the most, getting to experience heaven and then getting yanked out of it, probably never to return. That was pretty goddamn depressing. And her attitude in just the last few minutes had been incredibly bruising to my ego.
"You're the absolute best I've ever had." Just the sarcasm in her voice alone.
But I sucked it up, and didn't say anything more as we headed for the plantation. I kept my eyes on the prize, the experience points and the prospect of getting to level up tonight. We joined the procession of carriages winding up the front drive to the main house. It felt like the three of us were the poor relations who had to hoof it on foot. The manor was straight out of Gone with the Wind, with massive columns and porticos and a vast porch out front. Not to mention it was pretty wild seeing all the different modes of transportation riding up in front. Carriages that looked straight out of Cinderella, drawn by everything from horses to giant lizards. There were even flying mounts that landed in the grass out in front of the house. Gentlemen debarked and then offered their hands to bejeweled, gowned ladies as they got off the backs of griffins and flying steeds. We made our way up to the front porch of the plantation, where Ilaria's presence was already beginning to attract attention. Every man around her swiveled their heads to follow her as she passed, and virtually every woman either smacked their dates or scowled at Ilaria behind her back. I had to admit, no matter how much she'd pissed me off earlier, it was kind of cool having the hottest chick in the world as your date. In front of the main door stood frogs dressed as footmen. I'm not kidding. They were literal frogs, just 2 feet tall, standing on hind legs, wearing suits and tri-corner hats, with wigs made of tightly rolled curls. It looked like somebody had painted a picture of the founding fathers in the U.S., but replaced them with amphibians. Sort of like an aquatic version of dogs playing poker. I was guessing these guys were cousins of the merman we had met at Old Lil's bait shack. They stared at us with their big, glassy eyes as we walked up on the porch.
"Your names?"
one of the frogs croaked. "We're probably not on the list, but we have this," I said, flashing the Medusa ring that the plantation owner had given me. As soon as the frog saw it, he bowed and scraped and gestured with one webbed hand.
"Right this way, sir."
"Can you tell me if Lord Odeon's inside?" Ilaria asked.
The frog nodded.
"Yes, ma'am. Last I saw him, he was over by the refreshments."
We moved through the house as a lovely melody wafted from a nearby room. We peeked in and saw an ensemble of exotic instruments playing something akin to a waltz, as dozens of couples spun around a massive dance floor in extravagant dresses and well-tailored suits. As we kept on going, women and men walked by in a weird conflation of anachronistic time periods and Dungeons and Dragons, elves in silken dress robes, dwarves in military-looking uniforms, women in elegant ball gowns, and the occasional character with blue skin or the head of a werewolf. We found the refreshments, which so far was the understatement of the evening. It was a lavish display covering 6 tables with trays of every kind of delicacy. All sorts of roasted meats cut up into bite-sized morsels. Artfully arranged displays of exotic fruits. Silver platters of elegant pastries. Large crystal punch bowls filled with different colored liquids, from red to light blue to phosphorescent green. There was even a fountain trickling wine down multiple tiers. Revelers could fill their cups from a dozen different spouts spilling out into a 3-foot diameter basin at the bottom. Stig immediately tried to jump up on the table and dive headfirst into the wine fountain. I grabbed the coattails of his jacket and hauled him back to the ground just in time. "Not in here," I growled, then filled a silver goblet and handed it to Stig. He downed it in one gulp, then held it up as though asking for more.
"No, you can't get drunk before we..."
The dwarf opened its mouth as though to speak, and I knew any second a Muppet-like croak was going to come out of that black, bushy beard.
All right," I grumbled as I filled up 2 more goblets and handed them off.
Stig happily double-fisted them, sipping from one and then the other. Suddenly I felt Ilaria stiffen beside me. I looked over at her, and immediately saw who she was staring at. About 20 feet away stood a well-dressed gentleman, around 55 or 60, with kindly features and snowy white hair. He wore the same tight trousers and boots as the rest of the gentlemen at the party, including myself, but his jacket and shirt looked just a little bit more luxurious than everyone else's. He exuded money, poise, and aristocratic grace.
"That's the guy?" I asked.
She nodded silently. I could see the hatred in her face. "He's kind of old," I muttered. She flashed me a scowl.
"It was a long time ago when I worked for him."
"Was he young then?" A look of disgust crawled over her face.
"No, he was still old."
I raised my eyebrows at her.
She scowled again. "It's not like I get to choose who I serve."
I took it as an intended insult,
and shut down my facial expressions as I turned away.
Fine. What you want to do?
Out of the corner of my eye, I caught her looking at me. If I didn't know that I was dealing with a succubus, I could have sworn that she looked at me with sad tenderness, but I'm sure that was just wishful thinking on my part.
Well, I need you to introduce me, Alaria said.
I don't know him, I protested, annoyed.
Just tell him about the plantation owner and the way we protected his interests today, she smirked. He'll eat it up.
Fine. So I introduce you, then what?
No, actually, don't introduce me. Not at first. Just walk up with me on your arm. He'll ask who I am on his own, and I'll take it from there.
What? You think he'll try to seduce you?
Oh, I know he'll try to seduce me.
He's kind of old.
That never stopped him in the past.
I scrunched up my face in disgust as I thought about this old warlock with a bunch of nubile female demons all around him at his feet. I stuck out my arm and said, let's go. Alaria hooked her arm in mine. I felt the side of her breast brush up against me, and I thought of earlier this evening with a real sense of loss. Man, this sucked. But I still had a job to do. We walked over to Odeon as he was finishing up a conversation with an elf. As soon as a pointy-eared guy left, I stepped in. Lord Odeon, I asked. He turned to me with a bored expression.
Yes.
Then he caught sight of Alaria on my arm, and all his attention was diverted to her.
Yes,
he repeated, but in a far more interested and charming tone of voice. Alaria just giggled and hid her smile beneath her dainty hand, enclosed in a white silk glove. I had to admit it, if I didn't know how much she hated the guy, I would have been incredibly jealous. She put on that good of a show. I just wanted to meet you, I said. We helped out your neighbor this morning by...
Wonderful, wonderful,
Odeon said, not even looking at me. He took Alaria's satin-gloved hand and kissed her knuckles while never losing eye contact.
You must tell me, who is this charming creature who is your companion tonight, Mr... The name escapes me.
Ian, I said, irritated. The bastard wasn't even attempting to pay me any respect. Ian Hertzfelder.
Who is this lovely creature, Mr. Hertzfelder?
I realized that wasn't one of the details we'd worked out, and I doubted I could use her real name. Alaria jumped right in.
Lelania,
she said, and lowered her eyes shyly as she smiled.
What a beautiful name, the old codger said. Are you husband and wife?
Oh, no,
Alaria said quickly.
Fiancés?
No, not at all. We're merely friends.
Well then, Mr. Hertz, what was it again?
Hertzfelder, I snapped.
I shall have to steal this lovely creature from you for a moment and take her on a tour of my mansion. Will you excuse us?
He asked, and led Alaria away without even awaiting my response.
What a complete asshole. Entitled, rude, rich piece of crap.
I was going to enjoy killing his wrinkly old warlock ass. Alaria threw me a glance over her shoulder like, follow me. Then she returned to looking at her former master, who was blissfully unaware that he was walking towards his own execution. I looked around for Stig, but couldn't find him anywhere. Keeping one eye on Alaria and Odeon as they strolled leisurely through the crowd, I also searched for my imp/dwarf. He was over by the wine table, of course. I walked over, pulled the goblets out of his hands, and set them on the table.
Ah, come on, boss,
he whined.
Time for work. Let's go.
Stig stumbled along behind me as I walked towards the door Odeon and Alaria had disappeared through. I entered a dark hall lined with oil paintings of what I assumed were Odeon's ancestors. Lots of old men in armor or fancy suits. Usually armor when they were younger and fancy suits when they were older. Lots of portraits of women looking snooty, like they had sticks so far up their asses it would take an operation to get them out. No one else was in the corridor, though I could hear voices from around the corner.
I must say, the old man's unctuous voice purred, You are by far the most fetching beauty at the ball.
You flatter me, sir.
If I may be so bold, I am surprised to find you without a proper companion for the evening.
My friend is a fine companion, sir.
Oh, I am sure he is fine for card games and chit-chat,
the old man said mockingly, making my blood boil.
But I was thinking of someone who could offer more pleasurable pastimes.
I offered her plenty of pleasurable pastimes just a couple of hours ago, you old fart.
And what sort of pleasurable pastimes would those be?
Alaria giggled.
Perhaps I should just show you,
the old man murmured, and I heard the sound of kisses on bare skin. My jealousy got the better of me, and I edged right up to the corner so I could peek around it. At the end of the dark hall, outlined in moonlight from an open window, Odeon stood behind Alaria and kissed her bare shoulders. Behind them was a large mirror with an ornate golden frame around the edges. It must have stood 10 feet tall, and reflected the entire moonlit corridor back at me. Odeon wasn't looking up, but seeing myself in the reflection startled me. I backed up just enough that I could peek around the corner and see what was going on, but not enough to be noticed. Odeon was standing behind her, with his hands placed on the outsides of her arms. Alaria's head was cocked to the side to let him continue his caresses along her neck, but the look of disgust on her face was overwhelming. That look of utter revulsion put me back at ease.
You know, the last time you did this, I didn't have a say in it,
she spoke aloud. Odeon stopped kissing, though he didn't move his head. Even though I couldn't see his face, I was pretty sure he was wearing an expression like, oh shit, what is this?
What are you talking about, my dear? We have never met before tonight.
Oh, but we have. In fact, we knew each other for many years.
Odeon straightened up and stepped back in alarm.
I am sure I do not know what you're talking about.
Alaria turned around to face him.
It's just that I look different at the moment. But you're exactly the same. As repulsive and lecherous as always.
The old man's face grew cold and menacing.
I'm afraid I will have to ask you to leave.
Why? The party is just getting started. Ian,
she called out, and I stepped around the corner.
Stig stumbled drunkenly after me, ran into a wall, and fell over backwards. Not exactly the most imposing entrance, but it probably worked, because Odeon immediately relaxed. As far as he was concerned, we were a bunch of bumbling amateurs trying to blackmail him out of a few gold coins.
Leave now, or I shall have to call my guards and create quite a scene, which I'm sure you would prefer to avoid,
he said in a sinister voice.
Oh, yes. We do want to avoid making a scene, Alaria said. Or at least one that anyone might see.
I tensed up, waiting for the signal from Alaria. She was playing cat to Odeon's mouse, and was enjoying herself. She'd really taken the whole a dish best served cold thing to heart.
Leave now before I have to tarnish your reputation by having you forcibly ejected.
I couldn't give a damn about my reputation. That was ruined decades ago, long before I ever met you.
Mademoiselle, you keep speaking as though we are old acquaintances, but I do not know you.
Odeon said with a voice like icy steel.
I have never laid eyes on you before in my life.
Perhaps this will jog your memory, Alaria said,
and two fireballs appeared in the palms of her outstretched hands. At the same time, her dress burst into flames and slid off her body in a crackling pile of burnt cloth. The necklace must have melted or something, because the spell was broken. A pale-skinned, white-haired French aristocrat no longer stood in front of Odeon, but a red-skinned, raven-haired succubus with bat wings. The expression on Odeon's face was priceless. Oh shit, pretty much covers it. I immediately began casting my dark bolt, but in the 2 seconds it took me to get the spell ready, Odeon did something completely unexpected. he turned and ran. And not just into another room. He ran through the ornate gilded mirror at the end of the hallway, the one right behind him. It was bizarre. One second he was running headlong towards his own reflection, and then the next his two bodies met and melded into one. There was nothing left on this side of the mirror, but I could see him running deeper into the mirror world's hallway. I tensed up for some sort of crazy mirror attack, but he blew past my reflection inside the mirror. What the hell? Ian, come on, Ilaria yelled and darted through the mirror. Just like Odion, she met her reflection head on, and then a second later was running down the shadowy mirror world version of the hallway. Come on, Stig, I yelled, then ran after her full tilt. Stig scampered after me as I headed for the mirror. I really hope this worked. Otherwise, it was going to suck knocking myself out, not to mention cutting my face all to hell. But it did work. There was a sensation of passing through a cold sheet of water, and then I was on the inside of the mirror. Freaky. Maybe this was one of the new worlds that John Perkins had mentioned when I was hired. I followed Ilaria down the hallway, rounded the corner, and headed for the ballroom. As I ran, something surprised me. I was expecting it to be entirely silent. I mean, we were in a reflection world, right? The ball wasn't going on here. Except that it apparently was, because I could hear music playing. But it was wrong. Screechy, discordant, and ugly. The music made my skin crawl like fingernails screeching down a blackboard. As I ran, I looked in terror all around me. Hundreds of ball attendees turned and stared at me, but they weren't human, dwarf, or elf. They had faces made of pure fire, with mouths, noses, and eyes sculpted from glowing embers and burning flame. They were all wearing the fancy dress of the people back in the game world, but their clothes were consumed by the flames. I looked around me in horror, but nobody made a move to attack us. They just watched with undisguised curiosity as I ran after Ilaria and Odion. In addition to the music and partygoers, the house itself was wrong. The walls were all speckled and streaked with black fungus that spread out like nightmarish lace. The beautiful artwork in the other world was now hideous and corrupted, with disfigured faces leering out of the paintings, and scenes of mutilation and torture depicted in the style of Rembrandt. Ilaria and I burst into the main foyer of the house just as Odion was rushing down the steps outside. He raced past the footmen, which were no longer frogs but twisted, vicious demons with shark-like rows of teeth. Once we reached the porch, I saw how strange everything was outside, too. The sky was a deep purple, almost black but not quite. Shimmering clouds of phosphorescent green shifted and glowed in the sky. Sort of like the Aurora Borealis. Instead of green grass on the lawns, the foliage was black and spiky. The rose bushes that had adorned the outside of the house now had evil-looking black blooms, with vines that twitched and undulated grotesquely. Everywhere there had been a tree around the property, there now stood a black, gnarled growth that burned with deep blue fire. I looked out across the horizon, and could see hundreds of them lighting up the night like bonfires. Miles away in the distance stood something that had never existed in the other world, a giant castle with a single massive tower. Everything about the city glowed a dull orange, like iron taken out of a blacksmith's forge. Odion jumped on the nearest animal, a black stallion with glowing white eyes and bat-like wings, and then thundered across the plains towards the glowing city. Come on, Ilaria yelled at me as she set off across the black grass, running like a sprinter in her stiletto-heeled boots. Where are we? I asked Ilaria as I ran up next to her. Is this hell? One of them? There's more than one? There are seven of them. So that wasn't just a saying, that thing you said in the jungle about them freezing over? No, this one is Astaroth, which is where Odion drew all his power from. Are you from here? No, she said grimly, though I've spent some time here, unfortunately. I looked back at the grotesque menagerie of creatures and S&M-inspired carriages lining the drive of the plantation house.
It would have been nice to grab one of the mounts to chase after Odeon, but I couldn't. Not until I reached level 20 and got apprentice riding. That would definitely make the game a whole lot easier. So for now, we were stuck on foot, running after this asshole.
"Look, let's just give up and go back," I huffed and puffed as I ran. "We lost out on this one. There's no way we can catch him." "Wrong," Alaria said. "I know where he's going, and I know who he's going to see."
"Where and who?"
"That city up ahead is named Abaddon, and it's ruled by a demon lord named Malfuric. He's Odeon's patron. I'm pretty sure my former master is running to him like a little bitch, scared of fighting his own battles."
"He's not going to fight us?" I asked incredulously.
"He was always one to let me do the dirty work. You can see from the way he turned tail and ran that he's not exactly the bravest of souls."
"I thought you said he was a powerful warlock."
"He is. I expected him to summon demons to fight us, not turn tail and run."
"Boss, I can't do this,"
Stig groaned as he staggered along behind us. I looked back at him. It was still weird to see myself being followed by a dwarf instead of an imp.
"What's wrong?"
"It's these clothes."
"Just burn them up then."
"Really, boss?"
I could hear the hope in his voice. "Go for it," I said. "But give me your brooch first." Stig handed over the pin, which I slipped into my bag. Then he created a fireball and directed it upon himself. Within seconds, his clothes were a mass of flames and began to slough off his gray body. He sighed in relief and stopped stumbling quite so much, although he still wove in a drunken diagonal pattern more often than he ran straight. 34. It took us well over an hour, but we finally made it to Abaddon. On the outskirts of the city were a series of deep canyons carved out of the ground. They wound around in serpentine patterns, creating archipelagos of hilltops connected by iron suspension bridges. At the bottom of the canyons were mines, where demons of all shapes and sizes were bound to each other in chain gangs as they clanged pickaxes against stones. There were imps, horn devils, satyrs, and about 1,000 other varieties. It was the hell version of the elemental water spirits toiling out in the plantation fields. I was aware of one very real fact. I was the only human around. I don't know why, but it made me intensely uncomfortable. In the center of the mines, the city of Abaddon was laid out like a glittering jewel. All the buildings were created from the same glowing tiger's eye-like stone. The main building was a cathedral structure, with a towering front that reached up at least 1,000 feet. Behind it were a series of slender, sinister-looking spires, giving the impression of a hellish porcupine with its quills rising up straight to the sky. We reached the walls of the city and passed beneath the baleful eyes of dozens of guards. But rather than challenging us, they led us on through the city gates.
"Why aren't they stopping us?" I whispered to Alaria. "Why would they? As far as they know, we're demon citizens here on a quest."
"I'm not. I'm human."
"But you're with us."
"That's the only reason they're letting me pass?"
"Of course. Otherwise you'd be thrown in the mine so quick it would make your head spin."
That was unpleasant to hear.
"Where exactly are we going?"
Alaria pointed at the gigantic cathedral structure.
"In there. Malfuric's throne room. I'm pretty sure that's where Odeon's headed."
"Are we going to have to fight Malfuric too?" I asked.
"I don't know. But I don't care about him. I just want Odeon dead."
I thought about saying, "Well then I wish you had just gone ahead and killed him without monologuing back there in the plantation house." But I decided to keep that opinion to myself. As we continued to race through the streets, it was vaguely unsettling how easy all this was. I'd effectively gotten dumped into the middle of an enemy camp, and yet not a single one of them was making any sort of aggressive overtures towards me. I told myself that there were plenty of places in the game with neutral factions. Orcs who didn't necessarily want to kill or enslave humans, trolls who would leave you alone as long as you didn't bother them, goblins who went about their daily business and wouldn't attack unless provoked. But I had always encountered small groups of those races,
tiny villages, isolated outposts. I'd never been in the middle of an entire freaking city, where everybody looked like they belonged in the Book of Revelations, but were like, nah man, we're good. We reached the castle and stole our way inside. The giant tower was apparently for looks, because the main receiving hall was on the ground level, with giant steps leading up to the throne. As we crept inside, we could hear Odion's unctuous voice echoing through the hall.
I don't think you understand. The succubus is dangerous.
Is that why you ran like a coward?
A deep, rumbling voice chortled, reverberating through the hall like thunder. We took some stairs into the antechamber, ended up on a mezzanine, and peered over the side of the railing. Below us was a central dais, with a throne made of blackened skulls and bones. The throne was either sculpted out of iron, or they took actual bones and poured molten metal over them, then let it cool down. Either way, it was extremely creepy, and did nothing to dispel the Book of Revelations vibe. Not to mention, there was another giant, gilt-edged mirror behind the throne. I guess these assholes were into mirror magic, too. But even worse than all that was the creature sitting on the throne. He was a massive demon, with red skin like Alaria. But whereas she was the epitome of femininity, this guy was a caricature of brute masculinity. He had biceps the size of watermelons, and a chest as big around as an oak tree. He must have stood at least 15 feet tall, and the only thing he wore were chainmail pants, metal boots, and spiked bracers. His face was very much like a satyr's, with goat-like horns, a devilish beard, and glowing yellow eyes. His facial features alone would have been attractive, except that they were so infused with cruelty and viciousness that it was hard to look at him without thinking total sociopath.
There were two of them, Odion explained patiently. She has a new master, who apparently is aiding her and wiping out her previous masters.
And how do you know this?
Malfuric asked.
I got word of the death of Jastoth, a former warlock masquerading as a priest of Chalastia.
Malfuric grunted in discontent. Apparently he wasn't a fan. Odion continued.
I knew that Jastoth was her master after me. When I heard that a succubus had killed him, I assumed the worst and hired an assassin to go after her.
Apparently the assassin failed.
Unfortunately, yes. She showed up at my ball just an hour ago, with the intent of seducing me away from the crowd and then killing me.
The giant demon lord guffawed.
There's a sort of poetic justice in you being led to your death by your prick, since it rules everything else you do.
Odion gave a pained smile. Like how you would smile at somebody you despised, but whose good graces you depended on.
Yes, well, dwelling on the past does nothing to help me in the present. Will you give me a team of your finest mercenaries? She's probably already inside your kingdom right now, tracking me down, plotting to kill me.
Why don't you use your warlock powers and summon some of my cousins to do your bidding?
The demon lord sneered. If I hadn't known any better, I would have assumed he was trolling Odion. The old white-haired man smiled tightly.
You know I gave up my practices years ago. I prefer not to use coercion now.
Really? I think the water elementals on your plantation would argue otherwise.
So Malfuric was trolling him. Odion tensed.